It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll talk about fall comfort cooking with Midwestern food writer Jennifer Rood-Klett. First, exercise has been proven to decrease anxiety, depression, and stress, and boost self-esteem, mood, and energy. But knowing the psychological benefits of exercise doesn't always make doing it any easier, especially if you're already struggling with mental health problems. Winter months bring more barriers to exercise. It can be tough for a lot of us to get off the couch. Our next guest has advice to help us overcome barriers to exercise, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you find most challenging about exercising, getting physical activity regularly? What advice do you need on how to do it? Have you found a way to build it into your routine, whether it's a trip to the gym or a quick walk around the neighborhood? And in the winter, what do you do to stay active? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lisa Cadmus-Bertram is an associate professor of kinesiology at UW-Madison, leader of the Cancer Prevention and Control Program at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. Lisa, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Can you tell us a little more about the psychological benefits of exercise?
Certainly. Well, physical activity has many mental and physical health benefits, and it's really one of the best ways that we can sort of both reduce our risk of experiencing anxiety and depression, and also to help manage those symptoms if you're somebody who already experiences one or both of those.
Do we know why exercise, or even just, and I want to distinguish exercise or even just physical activity, why are they so good for our mental health?
Yeah, well, I think that they do provide, you know, the stimulation that often helps us to break out of cycles of worrying or rumination, which characterize both anxiety and depression for a lot of people that suffer from it. And there's also a lot of ongoing research around, you know, the mechanisms that underlie the physiologic response that exercise creates. So through inflammation or endorphins or other pathways, even including endocannabinoids, which are cannabinoid factors that are produced from within our bodies rather than something that we take in from outside that can help us to have that feeling of well-being.
Now, I just made a distinction that I think might be important, exercise or physical activity. Now, sometimes if we think, oh, exercise, that means I have to spend an hour doing cardio or go to the gym or the pool or whatever. That's great, but smaller amounts of physical activity that we might not even think of as exercise can have some of these same benefits. Do I have this right?
Yeah. So one of the big ways that our national physical activity guidelines changed in the past couple of years is we no longer have any minimum requirement for the amount of sessions, the length of a session that's thought to be beneficial. So if you think back 10 or 20 years, you may remember hearing, oh, you should do exercise 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And then around 2008, they said, well, actually, it turns out that it doesn't really have to be 30 minutes. It could just be 10 minutes at a time. And now that we have a more evolved scientific literature around physical activity and health, we actually understand it's the total volume of physical activity over time that really matters. So it is absolutely sort of an every minute counts way of thinking of things, where even short sessions or short bouts of physical activity are really important to our mental and physical health.
I want to speak to a very particular group of people, people dealing with depression and other forms of mental illness. They may know that exercise would help them, but easier said than done. In some ways, your brain is working against you when you're trying to get motivated. What thoughts do you have for people in that position?
Absolutely. I think that one piece of advice that I have that is great for people who are struggling with depression, but also applicable to anyone else as well, is when you're thinking about exercise, how to get motivated, how to get started, to try and come at it from a place of curiosity rather than a place of guilt, thinking I should be doing this. Why am I not doing this? Why can't I get off the couch? But really sort of looking at your habits and thinking, you know, when it's time for me to exercise and I'm not doing it, like, what am I feeling? Like, what am I experiencing? And then trying to troubleshoot from there. The other thing that I really, well, two other suggestions that I have. One is to really focus on the frequency of physical activity over the intensity or the duration of sessions. So if you can get out and you know, especially if you can get outdoors, especially if you can find somewhere with green space. We're learning more and more about how important that is to our mental health. But even get out for those very short periods of time, and you can just tell yourself, all I'm going to do is 5 minutes. All I'm going to do is 2 minutes, or whatever you feel is feasible. And once you're out the door, a lot of times you will find that you feel ready and able to do more. Not every time, but a lot of times. Another suggestion is one of the things that tends to coexist and is part of depression is sort of social withdrawal or isolation. So physical activity can be one way that you can reconnect with people. If there's somebody that, you know, you enjoy talking with, maybe getting together with them for a walk kind of is a two birds with one stone type situation, because it's going to help bring you some social connectedness and also give you a sense of accountability. So, you know, whether depressed or not, for a lot of people, knowing that you're going to meet somebody to go be physically active together is a lot more motivating. You're much more likely to actually follow through with that than if it's just an intention that you have to do alone.
We're talking to Lisa Cadmus-Bertram from UW-Madison's Department of Kinesiology, looking at the mental health benefits of exercise and physical activity and the motivation and how to get it, how to build routines around getting some activity. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Angela joins us now in Baraboo. Angela, hi.
Hi. Yeah, actually, it's an echo of what she just said. When I'm not motivated, I tell myself I'm only going to do this for 10 minutes. And sometimes I'll even set the alarm on my phone. But then, and sometimes after 10 minutes, I quit. I'm like, I'm done. But normally after 10 minutes, it's like, well, I can go another five. Well, I can go another five after that. Oh, well, you know what? I've done 20. I might as well do 30 minutes of activity.
That's great, Angela. And do you find that after that 10 minutes or once you get rolling, do you feel like it boosts your mood a little bit?
Yes, yes, definitely. I mean, I'm a runner, and running to me is just kind of like, it's almost like going to church. Some of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in my life have been when I've been on these runs just out in the country.
Angela, thank you so much for sharing that story. I appreciate it. So, yeah, as she said, Lisa, she was echoing that. If you do a little bit, that might be the first step to doing a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And on those days when you do the 5 minutes and you don't feel like continuing, then, you know, it's important to remember then the next step is to pat yourself on the back because you succeeded and you did those 5 minutes. And that's extremely important.
Thanks again for calling, Angela, at 800-642-1234. Now, Lisa, I know you work with patients at the Carbone Center who are, in many cases, recovering from cancer. And there's a paradox when it comes to fatigue, which could be for the patients you're dealing with and others. Sometimes we can solve our fatigue by getting some exercise. But sometimes, and we've talked about long COVID on the show, sometimes fatigue is a sign that we need more rest. How do we sort out what's causing our fatigue and what to do about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So especially for people going through cancer treatments that are causing fatigue, it is a bit of a cycle because physical activity is one of the most effective ways to deal with the fatigue. But of course, when you're feeling fatigue and going through it, the last thing you want to do is go be physically active. And I think a lot of other people experience that as well. For people who have fatigue and they're not really sure if they need more activity or more sleep, I think in a lot of cases, the answer may be both. And that's where really taking a look at your sleep hygiene can be so helpful and focusing in on, you know, just those standard things like trying to go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, make sure your sleeping area or your bedroom is nice and dark, avoid screens or blue light for an hour or two before bed. And I think that, you know, if you stick to those things alone can be beneficial for a lot of people.
We're talking about ways to get physical activity, even when we're unmotivated, maybe fatigued, maybe feeling depression, maybe when it's freezing and dark outside, or you just plain don't feel like it. Lisa Cadmus-Bertram is with us, Associate Professor of Kinesiology at UW-Madison, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you personally experienced mental health benefits of physical activity of some sort? Have you had trouble getting motivated? Have you found ways to build activity and exercise into your daily routine? Do you have questions? Need some advice or maybe inspiration from our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation about how to exercise when we really don't feel like it with Lisa Cadmus Bertram, Associate Professor of Kinesiology at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had trouble building exercise and activity into your routine? Did you find a solution that worked for you? Where do you see the mental and emotional benefits of exercise? Do you feel it? Are you doing something right now that's making you feel better? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lisa, I know for me anyway, maybe I'm the only person like this. If I'm counting on willpower to solve any problem, including getting more physical activity, I might as well just hang it up. It's got to be, something else, something I structure into my day or build a routine about. How important is that?
For a lot of people, it's incredibly important. We're all able to brush our teeth every day. There's other things that are just part of our habits and part of our lifestyle. And I think to the extent that folks are able to find a place where physical activity can fit in the same spot in their schedule every day, that's one approach that can be very successful for helping people to get it done and get it into their day. For other people who have a lot more variability, perhaps in their work schedules or their caregiving responsibilities, it can be a little bit more difficult to sort of create that very steady habit where they're doing the same routine of physical activity at the same part of the day. And that's where you have to get a little bit more creative and maybe mix it up a bit more.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Ted is with us now in West Allis. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your exercise story, Ted?
I've got a few comments to make. One of them is I am 70. I retired 4 years ago, and after the first, month, I put on probably, 10 pounds, and I immediately joined a couple of gyms. And as I hope most retirees understand that, when you get on a Medicare Advantage plan, they all have gym memberships included, no charge to you whatsoever. And you can join up to, at least with my plan, there's 8 or 9 different gyms that are on the list. You can join them as many as you want because they only get paid when you clock in, swipe in, whatever. And what I found is that, if you don't have anything really planned for the day, you don't know what to do or whatever, I think just getting up, getting off your butt, either taking a walk, go to the gym, whatever, it's going to get everything moving, your heart moving, which is going to pump more blood to your brain. I just feel like somebody mentioned going to church, and I find that a very good analogy. I think they all tie in body, mind, spirit. And I think, one feeds the other. And as you feed each of those, I just think the benefits take care of themselves.
Fantastic, Ted. Thank you so much for sharing that story with us. Lisa, one thing I wanted to key in on, and you can go where you want with it too, is Ted had a big change in his life. He retired and found that he needed to do something different. How can that disrupt our level of physical activity when we make a big life change like that?
It can be a huge disruption. Retirement's a big one. Starting a new job, having a baby is probably having a baby and retiring are probably the two biggest ones that really disrupt people's daily patterns. So both of those, I think the approach he took is a fantastic one. And I'm so glad you brought that up because that's a resource that's available to everybody who's on Medicare. And there's a lot of different ways to access that through a number of different community resources. But when you're making a big life change, it's a great idea to be mindful of how that's impacting other habits that you're having around your physical activity, your diet, and your sleep, and then starting to strategize about, whether you're satisfied with how things are looking now or whether there are some changes that you might be interested in making. The other great thing about, finding access to gyms, especially for older folks, is one of the things that we've learned through our research with people living in rural Wisconsin is that there are, sometimes more barriers, especially as we head into this part of the year where the days are shorter and a lot of people may not be comfortable, exercising outdoors when it's dark, especially when we start to get those slippery sidewalks. And especially for older folks, you got to be really cognizant of risks of of falls and things like that. So while I do encourage outdoor exercise, I think finding access to gyms is also a really important part of the puzzle if you're able to do it.
Another thing I love that I heard from Ted there was when he said, when I don't have anything better to do, you know, and, you know, we might pick up our phone or watch a TV show or whatever, and those are fine things. But having that on our roster of not doing anything else, why not go for a little walk? That can be an easy way to fit in some extra activity.
Yeah, absolutely. Or both, right? So one of the things that I enjoy while I'm exercising is watching shows or movies if I'm, you know, indoors and on the treadmill, or listening to music or podcasts outdoors, or even if you're out walking, you know, calling a loved one. Sometimes I go out for a walk for exercise and call my mom. So sort of combining so you can do something that you enjoy at the same time that you're getting your physical activity in.
Thanks again for that call, Ted, at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Elizabeth in Genoa City. Elizabeth, hi.
Hello, hello. Well, you know, I started doing yoga when I was in my 20s on television before computers were invented. And I put together a series of things that I keep tweaking through my life. I'm 62 now. I've been doing it almost every single day for 42 years. And I can tell when I don't do it how I tighten up. So I try to encourage other people to do it. Or if you've never done it, it's, to me, stretching and, you know, moving your body different ways so that you use and you massage your organs in the meantime inside. So then you could do chair yoga, which I've tried, which is really, really good if you've never done it before. So I just encourage it so much for people because I feel like I'm 30 and I'm 62.
Not bad, Elizabeth. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Lisa, yoga as a part of our toolkit here.
Fantastic. Thank you for your call and for this comment. That's especially as we're talking about emotional well-being and mental health. Yoga is absolutely amazing because it combines stretching and physical activity with that meditative component. So really combines a lot of, you know, physical, mental benefits all into one package.
Thanks again for that.
I like that you mentioned chair yoga. Sometimes people who are not as familiar with yoga might think, oh, you need to be very flexible, you need to be very limber. Well, there's many different types of yoga and can be adapted for any type of functional ability. So you're truly not too old or too young to be able to enjoy and benefit from it.
Elizabeth, thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Lisa Cadmus-Bertram, Associate Professor of Kinesiology at UW-Madison, looking at the mental health benefits of exercise and helping us get motivated to do exercise, to do physical activity, whatever situation we might be in. Still time for your call if you call quick at 800-642-1234 with your story or your question. Lisa, I want to dig a little deeper into winter now. You mentioned that as an issue for seniors, you know, and safety and ice, that's out there for all of us. But how about overcoming the motivation problems of exercise? When it, you know, the night is a lot longer. It gets dark earlier. It persuades me not to exercise sometimes. I'll admit that.
Okay. So I have three ideas here. One is to think about if there's ways that you can incorporate exercise during the middle of the day so that you can get the benefits of the sunshine and, you know, as well as some increased safety while you're exercising. So perhaps if you're retired, that's a little bit easier for some folks. If you are still working, then, you know, depending on your occupation, you may or may not be able to fit some short walks into your workday. Another approach is to think about what you can do to make exercising a little bit more appealing or safer outdoors. So making sure that you have good reflective apparel, that you have lights, maybe that you're walking with a friend, choosing well-lit, well-shoveled areas to walk on can be really important as well.
Yeah, my wife and I got little blinking lights for walking after dark. They're pretty dorky, but they do the job.
I have one more comment to that. And the other thing is that we are blessed here in Wisconsin with absolutely beautiful winters. And there's so many wonderful things that we can only do during winter, including some things like cross-country skiing, which are very gentle, very accessible. And you know, if that's something that appeals to you, I would encourage checking it out, because I think that if you can find those special things that you can enjoy outdoors that you can only do in the winter, then, you know, yes, we have the cold. Yes, we have the wind. Yes, we have the darkness. But we also have some things that we can look forward to during those really cold months.
I wanted to ask also about physical barriers to exercise. People might be, as with some of the people you work with, I'm sure, recovering from cancer. Some people might have chronic pain or an injury that they're recovering from. I mean, the list goes on and on. Do you have some suggestions on how people who have particular physical barriers can find the kinds of exercise that are still going to work for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that physical activity is so important for everyone, regardless of age or physical limitations. And so depending on your specific condition or injury, obviously it's going to vary a lot, but there's more and more resources available online. You can talk to your doctor or other providers or look for programs like here in the Department of Kinesiology. We have an adapted fitness program, which is designed to provide physical fitness training to people living with a really wide variety of disabilities. And they're partnered with undergraduate students to assist in that training. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. And, you know, you just kind of have to find what's the right fit for your particular situation so that you can get the benefits that you're looking for and make sure that you're doing it in a way that's going to be safe, that's not going to set you back with your recovery or exacerbate your condition or create other risks.
Lisa, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Lisa Cadmus-Bertram, Associate Professor of Kinesiology at UW-Madison, leader of the Cancer Prevention and Control Program at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. She talked to us about ways to make exercising and physical activity easier when you're struggling with barriers, including mental health, physical health, and more. If you have a story of how you found a way to stay active and you had to overcome some of those barriers, love to hear it. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up after the news, lentils, garlic, oats. Are you cooking or baking with those this fall? Our Food Friday guest is, and we've got some great comforting recipes and advice to share with you. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, early voting is underway for the midterm elections. We'll talk to a political scientist about what could happen if control of the House, Senate, or both changes parties. Now, as the seasons change, so does our cooking. Our next guest is here with a bunch of ideas on how to incorporate fresh local ingredients into comforting fall dishes and to keep the fun and comfort in our kitchens. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are some of your favorite things to make this time of year? What's on the menu tonight or this weekend? Is there a piece of fall produce that you always look forward to? And what is the ideal complexity of a recipe for you? Really fancy and fussy and highfalutin? Or something you can handle, easy and fun? Maybe a little biased there. I don't know. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer Rood-Klett is a freelance writer focused on Midwestern history, gardening, and food. She's the author of the cookbook Home Cooking Comeback. Her latest cookbook is called Home Cooking Comfort: More Neighborly Advice and Recipes from the Farm Kitchen of a Midwestern Food Journalist. Jennifer, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's good to be back on Central Time with Rob.
Yeah. And now there's two things I want to look at before we start checking out recipes. One, and I already knew this, you love using local seasonal ingredients. What are you excited about in the fall for local seasonal stuff?
Well, both cookbooks feature all foods grown, raised, or produced in Wisconsin. So it's very Midwestern, very Wisconsin cookbook. And in the fall, we look to root vegetables, apples, of course. And I like to incorporate a lot of oats with meals. So late crops of spinach and some of the cold crop things, soups, dry beans, chili, roast, This is the time of year when people can't wait to get inside and fire up the oven.
And why do you like cooking with seasonal stuff as much as possible?
Oh, because it provides the home cook with the absolute best possible outcome, without a doubt.
And you're really encouraging people to cook, period. You worry that we've gotten a little too in the habit of, you know, restaurants, which are fine, and convenience foods, which you want to see us cook a little more or a lot more.
Yeah, I sure do. You know, home cooking is a skill, and it's kind of fallen off of late. A lot of young people don't know how to cook. And, you know, when I wrote the cookbooks, I tried to keep the novice home cook in mind. And I know a lot of people have been trying it since the pandemic. But I also encourage people that have been cooking a long time to stay teachable, because I know from all the newspaper stories I've written, every single story I've written about food, and so many interviews I've done with food producers, I learn something every single time. So I would urge people to remain teachable. The other thing that's really timely right now is that the costs of everything are going up so much. And you know, I like going out for a Friday fish fry as much as the next person, but to cook at home, you can really save a lot of money doing it that way.
And another thing that I love about the book is, you know, we can watch a lot of shows on TV where cooks are making this amazing looking stuff. And we might open a cookbook and there are these like brilliant artistically laid out pictures of the fancy meal. You say we shouldn't be comparing ourselves. We can be okay with not being perfect in our cooking.
Absolutely. Home cooking is meant to be imperfect. It's by its very nature. You know, unfortunately, perfection has been thrust upon us so much in the society, and home cooking is, by its, again, nature, very imperfect.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Jennifer Rood-Klett about her new cookbook, Home Cooking Comfort, more neighborly advice and recipes from the farm kitchen of a Midwestern food journalist. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What seasonal Wisconsin food are you enjoying? Maybe right now or planning to enjoy this weekend. What says comfort food to you in the fall? What do you love to cook? Or eat if someone else is cooking? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. By the way, we've got some recipes from Jennifer. You can find them at WPR.org/Food Friday. And Jennifer, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to start with dessert today because you gave us a dessert recipe and you actually brought some of these in for us here. Oat cookies with browned butter cinnamon frosting.
Yeah, these have become the ultimate fall cookie. I've made them a lot recently. And, you know, I have to tell you, Rob, that this is the first time I've ever brought in a sample from something from the cookbook.
Oh, no.
And everywhere I go, people say, did you bring samples? And I say, no, I want you to cook at home. This is the goal here. But I felt that you broadcasting people here needed a little pick-me-up, it being Friday afternoon, and we've been working hard all week.
Yes. Yeah, so, and we do love our delicious treats here at Wisconsin Public Radio, for sure. Now, here's the oats you were talking about. And you're a big fan of oats. They're kind of a humble food, but can you talk about the versatility? What kind of different things can we do with our oats?
Yeah, I would encourage anybody to incorporate as many oats as you can in your recipes. And amazingly, oats were once shunned for human consumption. They were thought of as livestock feed, and they eventually became a food staple in Northern Europe, Ireland, Scandinavia, Germany, Switzerland, and came to North America in the 1600s. And it was an amazing nourishment for for our soldiers during both of the world wars. Wisconsin is ranked number one for oat production. I did not know that prior to doing this story.
I should know that.
Yeah, according to the USDA, and it also ranks first for number of farms growing organic oats, although a lot of that actually still goes to livestock. So for home cooks, you can encounter oats in many forms. The whole grain oat is called a groat, which is kind of a weird name. And if you cut that groat two or three times, you've got steel-cut oats is what you commonly see it as. And the home cook is probably very familiar with rolled oats. And the difference between the three is kind of the cooking time and the texture. And, of course, oats can be ground up and be used as flour, but there's no gluten in that, so you have to be careful if you are wanting a rise out of whatever you're baking.
My favorite go-to for oats is crisps, fruit crisp, apple crisp, peach, I mean, you name it. Throwing some oats and flour and butter together, that's like so easy. Like, I can do that by memory now. I haven't looked at the recipe in years.
Yeah, and one thing I should mention too, all of the information about my cookbooks are available on Amazon.com, and at my website at jrootklet.com, there's direct links to purchase the cookbooks. And with oats, you know, typically you find rolled oats in the supermarket and they're fine. But if you ever head out to a farmer's market, especially tomorrow with some of the last ones going on, or even a winter's farmer's market is a good source for this. If you can score some local rolled oats or any type of oats, buy them because they are so much better. What happens when big manufacturers roll the oats, they often steam them, and that extends the shelf life. So they're minimally processed, and they're fresh, and they're local. And there's quite a few oat producers, growers in the state. So if you can, they're going to be more expensive, but in my book, they're worth it. So if you can find them, buy them.
That reminds me, another ingredient you are excited about, and who wouldn't be? Garlic, and this is something we can pick up in Wisconsin this time of year. Talk about getting that fresh local garlic in the state.
So I did a story for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last August, and that's right when the fresh garlic season begins. And I had previously used garlic in fresh garlic in my cooking, but I discovered that people go absolutely crazy over garlic. And the story ran right before a couple of big farms, or I should say a couple of smaller farms, had their big garlic sale opening up. And it caused almost a panic, on a run on garlic. People were just panicked that they weren't going to get their garlic. Garlic is one of those absolutely amazing things. And again, if you go out, if you head out to a farmer's market tomorrow, see if you can find some. You can still get some from this season. So home cooks, you know, a couple of things you should know about garlic. Number one, it is an incredible food for boosting immunity. I mean, it's an antibacterial, it's an antifungal, it's an antivirus. And when you're using fresh garlic in the kitchen, it doesn't matter really if you chop it or press it or whatever, but it's got something called allicin in it, I've been told. And if you let's just say you chop the garlic, let it sit for 10, 15 minutes, it actually makes more allicin. So it actually becomes more healthful for you. And, you know, we grow garlic out at our farm, and there's a couple that I really like. I like, there's hundreds of types of garlics. And I really like Music, Georgian Crystal, Romanian Red, and German Porcelain. But to be honest with you, I've never had a garlic I didn't like. So, again, I can't emphasize enough, if you can get some local fresh garlic, buy it. And don't refrigerate it because it's going to want to sprout. Just keep it in a cool, well-ventilated place.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Jennifer Rood-Klett about her new cookbook. It's called Home Cooking Comfort, More Neighborly Advice and Recipes from the Farm Kitchen of a Midwestern Food Journalist. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Well, are you a garlic fan too? Do you grow your own or buy it at a local farm stand or farmer's market? Love to hear what you like and what you're doing with it. In general, are you loving squash this time of year as I am? That's one of my favorite fall ingredients. Do you have a question for Jennifer about how to cook with some of the great local produce that's going on? What is your favorite thing to cook this time of year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Find a few recipes from Jennifer at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Jennifer Rood-Klett. We're talking about fall seasonal cooking, home cooking, comfort food. Her new book is called Home Cooking Comfort, More Neighborly Advice and Recipes from the Farm Kitchen of a Midwestern Food Journalist. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Looking to hear from fans of garlic and oats, and how about some lentils or any other fall produce here in Wisconsin that you love to cook, eat, maybe grow your own self? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Find some recipes from our guest at WPR.org/Food Friday. Okay, we had fun with those cookies. Now let's get a salad in here. Jennifer, you gave us an apple arugula salad with fennel seeds and walnuts. Interesting combo.
Yeah, I really like this recipe because it's, even though it's wonderful to eat apples out of hand or slice them up with some good cheddar cheese, it's also nice to have a recipe with apples that's not fattening. Mm-hmm. And this recipe is absolutely incredibly off the charts healthful for you. It calls for either arugula or spinach leaves, one apple chopped into bite-sized pieces, celery, extra virgin olive oil or walnut oil. I kind of have been liking walnut oil lately. A little bit of honey, lemon. That's your dressing you're going to be pouring on. And then after that, you're going to be applying some walnut halves on top. And then I really like fennel seed, dried fennel seed. So sprinkle a little of that on top with some Parmesan cheese. And this is so incredibly good in the fall with pork or bacon, or anything, any pasta that's got a little bit of Parmesan in. This is a great accompaniment for that.
Find that recipe online at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Mary is with us in Lac du Flambeau. Mary, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to mention freezing garlic. I'm a big fan of America's Test Kitchen. They do all the testing, so we don't have to. And they've mentioned on a recent episode that freezing whole cloves, and then when you take it out of the freezer to use it, you can just grate it on like a microplane or, you know, the small holes of your grater. And I've done that because not all of us have a good way to store the wonderful garlic we get this time of year to keep it from sprouting. If you don't have a nice cool place for it, then freezing those whole cloves can be a good idea.
And Mary, we're peeling, I assume, the cloves before we freeze them? That'll make life easier, I bet.
I haven't.
Oh.
It's just not that much. I mean, when you grate a piece of garlic, if there's a little bit of the peel in there, by the time you're done cooking with it, it just doesn't matter.
Fair enough. Mary, thanks for sharing that. Freezing to keep that fresh garlic for the future.
Yeah, I had not heard of that. I think that's a wonderful idea. Anything you can do, but, you know, again, if you can score some local garlic, buy enough until next August. Seriously, mm-hmm. if you've got the space to store it or you can stick it in the freezer, absolutely stock up because you're going to really appreciate that in January or February or March when you're looking to make some simple pasta into something wonderful.
Thanks so much for sharing that with us at 800-642-1234. Jane joins us now in Shawano. Jane, hi.
Hi, hello.
What's your produce, Jane?
Well, I've just started this past few years growing butternut squash and acorn squash, and I was so happy when I realized how easy butternut squash soup was, and I love it. And I at least make it once or twice in the fall. And also my acorn squash, I was looking up recipes and I found that I didn't realize you could just slice it and eat it. And I thought, you know, after you bake it with, you know, maple syrup or whatnot.
Oh, okay.
And,
yeah.
And I was really pleased and it's easy to do and I love it. And that would be my comment.
And how much squash are you growing, Jane?
Just like one plant of each.
Okay.
Yeah, because we don't have a very big family. So, and also we have some friends that my husband works with that have fresh garlic, and I agree. Oh, my gosh, very yummy.
Jane, thanks so much. I am a big squash fan. I have proven very bad at growing my own squash, though. Thanks for sharing that. What are your, Jennifer, what are some of your favorite ways to use squash in the fall?
You know, I kind of just bake it, cut it in half, and bake it. And you know, Jane mentioned maple syrup. I'm a huge fan of maple syrup, and we are really so spoiled and lucky that we live in Wisconsin. We have absolutely incredible food to choose from. There are incredible small maple syrup producers on all over the place. So that's something I really like with squash. I love squash. And another one I would suggest out there is delicata squash, which is among the easiest to, you know, scoop everything out and get it ready and throw it in the oven.
Yeah, and a big thing I'll do is cook down the squash, just bake it in halves, like you said, and then I'll let it cool, scoop it into a container, and so I try to have a freezer full to get me through the winter. Then it's easy to get out for soup is mostly what I'll do with it.
And it makes good baby food, too.
Yeah, it's been a while, but yes, I imagine it would. It is Food Friday. We are talking to Jennifer Rood-Klett about her new cookbook. It's called Home Cooking Comfort, More Neighborly Advice and Recipes from the Farm Kitchen of a Midwestern Food Journalist. Well, I want to get to the third recipe you shared with us, speaking of soups, a French lentil soup. Okay, this sounds fancy. It's not too fancy for Rob, though?
No, you know Rob. You know me. There's no fancy here. These are all real world recipes. And so my soup recipes are, I am very devoted to my soup recipes because they kind of bring balance and comfort and normalcy back to my diet, especially after the holidays when you're indulging in all this high calorie food and parties and open houses and dinners. And so you get back to your standard soups. I probably make six soups that I rotate, and French lentil soup is just a great soup to make right now. It calls for carrots, celery, onion, a little garlic, and I like to use low sodium chicken broth. And I like French, you know, I am calling it French lentil soup. That is a little bit snobby here. But I will say, if you can score some French lentils, they're a little bit smaller and they kind of retain their texture a little bit more than normal brown lentils. But the brown lentils are absolutely fine too. But if you can get the French ones, go for it. There's also a little brown rice in here, some thyme, some cumin. And then at the end, when everything is cooked thoroughly, you throw in a little handful of chopped spinach and parsley, and it's just wonderful. And of course, it gets better with every reheat and goes great with some grilled cheese sandwiches or just some crusty bread. We are very partial to Madison sourdough, and so we typically have that with all of our soups.
Mm. Now, my favorite kind of soup that I make is, I call it fridge soup or freezer soup. I look and see what I have. See what's going to go bad soon, and then I work it into a soup. Do you have advice for people on, you know, not necessarily starting with the recipe, but starting with what do I got, what do I do with it?
Yeah, that this is one of my sayings, Rob. It's called move the merchandise in my kitchen. And I completely agree with what you just said, because I amaze myself that I've taken these things that I call half rotten. They're not really rotten. But you look in your fridge, what's got to go, you put it all in, and you're eating the soup, and you just can't believe how great it tastes.
Mm. Now, we just have a little bit of time left. I'm hoping you can give a pep talk to someone out there who might be listening, thinking, I wish I cooked more, I didn't really learn much growing up. What advice do you have for them to take the first couple of steps to home cooking?
I think it's important to remember that with home cooking, or with food, actually, you control everything you eat. And you can't say that about much in life. And I encourage people to think of it this way, that be the boss of your kitchen. You're in charge. Command and control. And allow yourself some time to calmly decide how you're going to feed yourself.
And you, just in our last half minute or so, you have a lot of fun cooking, and I know sometimes it can be stressful when you're trying to cook under a deadline. How do you keep it fun for yourself?
Oh, you just have to have a sense of humor with everything, Rob. But yeah, there is a little bit of pressure when you're a food writer and a food journalist, knowing that you have to make something and then you have to take a picture of it. And not only do you have to get the recipe right and it's got to be good, but that picture has got to be spot on.
Jennifer, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio today.
My pleasure.
That's Jennifer Rudklatt, a freelance writer focused on Midwestern history, gardening, and food. We talked to her on this week's edition of Food Friday about her new cookbook. It's called Home Cooking Comfort. More neighborly advice and recipes from the farm kitchen of a Midwestern food journalist. Find a few of the recipes she shared with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. We got those oat cookies with brown butter cinnamon frosting, the French lentil soup, but it's not too fancy, and the apple arugula salad with fennel seeds and walnuts, all again at WPR.org/Food Friday. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, political campaign ads. I've seen a few. There's a good chance. So have you. Kate and her guest look at political advertising this midterm season, negative ads along the way. You can join in to tell us what you're seeing and what you're getting sick of. That's coming up Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. When you see a beehive, there's a lot of activity going on. It seems like it's really full of energy. And it turns out it literally is, with an electrical charge maybe on par with a thundercloud. As reported in Smithsonian Magazine, weather researchers in England were out researching the weather when their sensors detected something weird, an electrical charge in the air. Turned out it was coming from a nearby swarm of western honeybees. What? Well, that accidental discovery led to more focused research. They found that when bees swarmed together, there was a measurable increase in electrical activity in the nearby air. Individual bees carry a small static charge. When you get them together, they form a charge that's 8 times greater than a thunderstorm cloud per unit of area. But don't start planning on a bee-driven energy future just yet. To power one LED light, it would take a swarm of about 50 billion bees. Next steps, check out the locust. 80 million per square mile. When they swarm, they could affect local weather. Electrical insect news you can use. This is Central Time.